by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with Charlotte Littlefield. She's off tonight. Boy, I tell you what, we've got one of the finest guests we've ever had on the program tonight. And I'm going to welcome him to the program and then let him tell you something about him. Welcome to our program, Shane Widener.
How are you, George? It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I tell you what, welcome again to the program. And I'll tell you what's going on in your life right now. Tell our listening audience all about your background and bring them up to date.
Oh, well, let's see. I've been a longtime Austin resident since 89. First came out here to go to school at UT and never left. The story of many, I'm sure. And while I was at UT, I decided I wanted to open us a spot, a little nightclub with some live music down on 6th Street. And we ended up opening the outfit called Hang'em High Saloon at the corner of 6th Street and Brazos. Did really well with it and ended up buying that property and eventually leased it to Buffalo Billiards, which is there now. And Buffalo Billiards has been there for, God, I guess probably 14 years. And we actually sold them the building last year. And some of my partners from that company, we ended up securing the rights to the Ernest Hemingway name and trademark signature and launched a hotel and resort company based on the life and spirit of Ernest Hemingway, and are getting ready to open up our first couple of hotels. We have a hotel and casino that's going to be opening in Gulfport, as well as one in Key West, which is Hemingway territory. And most recently, I started an involvement with Strange Brew and Strange Brew Loungeside, which is a coffee shop and live music venue here in Austin. It's been open for 4 years and has just gone gangbusters. And we won this past March during the South by Southwest. We won three first-place awards at the ceremony there for best music venue and best acoustic venue and best all ages venue. We beat out ACL Moody Live and beat out Saxon Pub and Continental Club and for the best music venue in town. And it's something we're extremely proud of, obviously. In fact, I talked to Margaret Mosier from the Austin Chronicle, who's been producing the Austin Music Awards for the last 32 years, and she told me backstage that we were the first music venue to ever win all three awards. And so we were extremely delighted to hear that, and it was quite a smashing success by all accounts.
Right. I noticed there's two ladies in one of the photographs there, two ladies dear to your heart. Who were they?
Oh, indeed. Yeah, I had my 13-year-old daughter, Grace Widener, who's a student at Gorritsky Middle School. She's involved in the theater company there as one of the officers and also in the cheerleading squad and an honor society. So she was pretty happy to be able to walk the red carpet and show pictures to all of her friends. And so it was quite an event for her. And I also had my fiance, Marcy Hernandez. She was with me as well, and Marcy is I'm actually a silent partner with Marcy. She's the brains behind our new Allstate agency that we opened up a year ago. In fact, we just celebrated our one-year anniversary on the Allstate agency this past Monday.
Right. Strange Brew is on Manchac Road, as we say in Austin, but it's Manchaca in Espanol. Where is that at exactly? What's the address?
We're located at 5326 Manchac Road, which is just north of Stassney Lane. And it's funny, Strange Brew started out as a 800-square-foot coffee shop that could. And it was just this tiny little thing. And my partner, Scott Ward, who's kind of the heart and soul of Strange Brew, decided that he wanted to open a music venue as well. And through a series of expansions, we began buying out other tenants adjacent to us to where we now occupy 5,000 square feet at the Crockett Center at 5326 Manshack Road, and have a music venue that holds about 200 people. And the coffee shop's gone gangbusters. I mean, we occupy probably 80% of the Crockett Center altogether. And I've got a big backyard section and the music venue and coffee shop with great food and great coffee, and it's all organic fair trade coffee. And so this thing has grown enormously over the last 4 years, and we're pretty thrilled with the success we've had with it.
Yeah, especially that patio on the backside outside is very nice. You've got it covered. You've got electrical outlets there, and you have Wi-Fi that people can just come in on wireless. That's really nice. People love that.
Yeah, it's great. In fact, one of the things we're doing right now is we're in the process of raising a pretty significant chunk of money, George. We've got a business plan that I just finished up. We're raising a good deal of funds. We're going to be landscaping that whole back patio area and even expanding the music lounge by another 1,000 square feet so we can accommodate more folks for some bigger shows. And we're actually working on developing a 24-hour cafe concept, much in the spirit of 24 Diner and Kirby Lane and Magnolia, for those of your listeners that are familiar with those late-night concepts. So we've been very busy with that, and we actually have located a restaurant site that we're going to be converting into that 24-hour cafe concept very soon.
Oh, you know, one thing, too, about you, Shane, you have an entrepreneurship that, not even no one's close to, because there wasn't there a business plan you put together that was a 100-pager recently?
Yeah, that's the one for Strange.
Was that exhaustive? But you have to do it to see what the numbers are going to be, don't you? Huh?
Yeah, I probably slept four nights a week for the last 6 weeks.
It
was quite an undertaking because, as I mentioned, we're working on this 24-hour cafe concept and expanding Strange Brew even more just to meet demand. So it was quite an undertaking, and there's a lot of moving parts to it. And we actually started receiving funds from our first next round of investors. And so it's really gratifying to get so much support from our partners and be able to put something of this magnitude together here in what has long been kind of sleepy South Austin. And here it is, just boomtown for us, and it's really exciting.
Right. What kind of advice would you give to young entrepreneurs that would like to go out and start up businesses like you've done?
Well, I mean, the main thing I would say is just, you know, be fearless, pursue your passion, surround yourself with smart people smarter than yourself. And, you know, as I often say, you know, opportunities abound. But it's important that you do your due diligence and your research and make sure that what you're going to embark on is an opportunity that's really worth pursuing in the long run. I see a lot of energy and time expended on things that don't really amount to much because people didn't really assess the overall project well. But once you've zeroed in on something that makes sense and you've done your research, you know, my advice is to be fearless, be willing to accept the risk, and again, surround yourself with smart people and make sure that you've assessed all the particulars really well, and don't be afraid. Pull the trigger on it.
Y'all believe in giving back to the community, and there's a charity type of event coming up that for what, diabetes or something? Tell us about that.
Yeah, indeed. One of the things that Strange Brew's real keen on is to really give back to the community. And as I mentioned, you know, my partner, Scott Ward, he's long been the founder of Strange Brew and Loungeside, and really the heartbeat, you know, of our company, if you will. Scott Ward and Casey Crowley do all of the booking of bands and so forth here. And Casey Crowley is a musician of great note herself. In fact, she was signed to Atlantic Records back in the mid-90s and had cut several albums on Atlantic Records label. And Ahmet Erdogan, the chairman CEO of Atlantic Records, fell in love with her and signed her to a record deal. And she was on Lilith tour and touring all over the world and opening up for Neil Young and people like that. And it's great to have her energy on board with Strange Brew because we're able to, you know, treat the musicians very well, and she handles the booking, her and Scott. And we get to do events that help the community. As you mentioned, we do have this big benefit that's coming up on Saturday, April 12th from noon to 4. And all of the proceeds from that benefit are going to the Family Diabetes Resource Center of Texas and their executive director, Christy Farmer, a good friend of mine. And Christy has a son with diabetes, and she wanted to open up a nonprofit that would help low and moderate income families get all of the supplies they need to treat their kids, you know, the testing strips and the syringes and insulin and things like that that are, you know, a part of their everyday life. They can be quite costly. And so the nonprofit that Christy created helps provide funds to families in need to provide those things for their kids. And she wanted to do a fundraiser, and we spoke about it. And we put this Saturday, April 12th event together, which is going to feature Malford Milligan from Storyville as a headliner. And then we have Sally Allen, Bucca Allen's wife here in Austin, that will be doing an acoustic set. And Casey Crowley, as I mentioned, she will be performing as well. And then another band will be performing that's pretty close to my heart, which is my band, Cold Sweat. And I got to tell you, it's kind of crazy to be playing, you know, at Strange Brew, to have my band appearing. You know, I get to watch everybody else perform on our stage and hear how great our sound system is all the time. And, you know, to actually go up there and perform and see what that's like.
Oh, man, that's great. That's wonderful.
It really is. And, you know, one of the things that I think really got us so much accolades and really helped propel Strange Brew in the music community was when Scott put together the lounge side venue, he made sure to spare no expense. And we have all the best equipment and sound system that you could ever ask for, and the musicians just rant and rave about it. And it was so good that QSC even ended up sponsoring us. And so they've got their logo attached to ours on the lounge side, which I think is a stamp of quality and approval that's pretty unsurpassed. And so it's great to have their involvement as well. And this benefit that we've got coming up, George, we've got a silent auction and raffle tickets that will be sold. Some of the great goods and services that area businesses have donated to us that'll be in the silent auction include everything from rounds of golf and hotel stays to jewelry, and we even got some guitars donated to us by South Austin Music and Straight Music that I took and had signed by Joe Ely and Ian Moore and
Ray Vincent
of Asleep at the Wheel, and those will be auctioned off at in the silent auction. And then we've also got barbecue. It's a barbecue buffet. And all this, the proceeds, again, go to the Family Diabetes Resource Center, and the tickets pre-sale are $15, and people can buy those tickets by going to strangebrewloungeside.com and buy their tickets online. Again, it's $15 pre-sale and $20 day of the show, and it's from noon to 4, Saturday, April 12th. And it's going to be a lot of fun, and I would love to see Austinites come out and support this new nonprofit that's got such, you know, a good mission statement to help families in need with diabetes. And so it's going to be a great cause and a lot of fun as well.
Right. I commend you on really helping also individual musicians in town. Are there any closing comments you might have, Shane?
Well, you know, I think, you know, Strange Brew, its mission statement is to bring Austin great quality music, great coffee, great food, and do it at a very good price, and to try to give back to the community by doing these kinds of events. You know, we're really fortunate to have people like Casey Crowley and also Jeff Plankenhorn, who's our music director and a musician as well, and to really drive the lounge side and propel it forward and make sure we have interesting events that are appealing to the public, that where they get to come and have fun and support a great cause. And it all kind of makes a perfect storm, if you will, here in South Austin. We're in a market that's really underserved. And so we've managed to put something really special together here. And the more support we can get for these events, the better. And I really urge people to go to strangebrewloungeside.com and to get their tickets for the event. And we'll hope to see them there.
Okay. Well, Shane Widener, thank you very much for this evening, this excellent interview and information and really helping individual musicians in the city of Austin. I commend you highly. Thank you very much, Shane.
Hey, George, it's good talking with you, and thank you to your listeners, and we hope to see you Saturday, April 12th.
Okay, thank you, sir. Good night.
All right, take care.
Thank you again, Shane Widener. He's done quite a bit for Austin and Austin musicians. Getting back to the news this first hour, and also the second hour, I must remind our listening audience that we're going to have David Yurth, Y-U-R-T-H. He's a very well-respected expert on remediation of radiation. And he attended and was our co-master of ceremonies along with Dr. John Apsley on March 22nd and 23rd. And we had a wonderful conference. I want to thank each and every one that participated. Some of the names, like Randall Mock, ran one of our cameras and did some great shoots there. And Mary Anderson, my gosh, Mary, thank you very much for everything that you did. You brought us water. You took trips, took people around, gave them rides. We want to thank Mary Anderson immensely. And Janice also, thank you, Janice, for giving people rides around and so forth. But there were many other names and so forth. Dr. John Apsley, thank you, John, for coming in at your own expense and standing up there 2 days. That's a long time, 9 to 7, and being our master of ceremonies along with David Yurth. This second hour will be David Yurth's speech, which is going to run approximately 55 minutes long, and he talks about his experiences in remediating. He had different companies over the years out of Salt Lake City, and he and several groups at one time or another went through a series of inventing new technology that would remediate very highly radioactive material down to nothing, to not negative, but very inert type of material that was not harmful to anyone. And their trials and tribulations with the energy department and so forth, it just went on and on. And to hear tell, I mean, my gosh, you can't begin to understand what they were up against as far as the federal government goes and trying to do the right thing. And then time and time again, a couple of times they got smashed down. They got just knocked down as what they wanted to do to help, you know, progress the remediation technology. But I'll let you listen to that the second hour. And Dr. John Apsley will introduce him. And I'm not going to even come on there. I might give a couple of minutes of promo just to preview a little bit and set it up the first 2 minutes or so. And then Dr. John Apsley will introduce David Yurth until the end of the program there. I had occasion a week ago to go down to the state capitol. We had a dedication down there, okay, of a Vietnam War monument, okay, and I believe it took about 9 years to put that together. And there were some very, very fine Vietnam veterans down there between 65 and 70 years of age. I was in the Army during the Vietnam era. I did not go to Vietnam. I was called back and went back in and was standing in line, and they, with my shirt off, and they came up to me and they said, "Hey, soldier, what's wrong with your right arm?" I told them, "Well, it's partially paralyzed." And they said, "Well, step out, soldier. You're not going to war at all, you know." So because of that injury that had occurred about 6 months earlier, I was unfit for service at that time. And I thought for some reason I could be a supervisor or something like that. Well, anyway, I want to commend all the very fine veterans that did go to Vietnam and were all well-intentioned. And I believe the honorary chairman was Lady Bird, and I can't really understand that choice myself. I would have chosen someone else. But because of her husband, the president, LBJ's prosecution of the war, and then the Gulf of Tonkin was, we know, a false flag operation that was used to expand the war against Vietnam, North Vietnam. So, you know, making her honorary chairman, I just couldn't go along with that. I wouldn't have approved of it at all. But she was, and then, of course, since it took 9 years, she passed away before this monument was actually dedicated. But otherwise than that, there were some really fine people, like I said. On the way out, I was talking to a man that had suffered Agent Orange, injury and contamination. And I was, proffering ways that he could seek some kind of a medical relief, but everyone's locked into the VA, And it's just like we've had several people over the years. Bart Billings is one. He's a colonel out of the West Coast, retired, and he slaved for years in the VA system. In fact, he created the combat stress conference every year out on the West Coast. And he's done really a very commendable job in trying to get people that have been in combat to reconcile some of their trauma and so forth. And this post-traumatic stress, disorder is very prevalent. Recently we had a shooting in Fort Hood. And there again, that soldier was categorized as a post-traumatic stress, disorder type person. But one of the things that was made clear was that he was on some kind of a psychiatric drug of some kind. And that seems to be the commonality in almost every one of these shootings, whether they're school shootings or they're shootings that have taken place up on Fort Hood, too, have taken place in the last couple of years there. So this is very distressing. I think President Obama made some statements like he should have, and we must, commend him for doing that. We don't know where these things are going to go. I mean, do soldiers that are on post there have a right to carry arms on them? I think today, under Texas law and so forth, I don't think they have that right. That's a military reservation, though. So I think that they need to change the federal or whatever is controlling in this case, and allow those soldiers to be armed if they wish to on base. I mean, I think a sidearm could have cut this thing short. I think that's all the soldier used up there was this Ivan Lopez, is the shooter up there. And I think he used a .45 in, killing most of the people. I think there were 4 fatalities, including himself, and there's 16 or more injured up there. And they were taking them to the local hospital, Scott and White and so forth. But it was just really a mess. The Bilderberg group is going to meet, at the end of May. I think it's 29th, 30th, 31st, and then maybe their day of travel is the 1st of June, 2014. They're going to meet in Copenhagen, Denmark. Okay, I've been up there many, many years ago, and I'd like to try to get something going up there. I'm just at the beginning of working on something, and I'll be making more announcements in the future on that. The Bilderberg group itself is a very powerful group, and they meet once a year, and they put together all kinds of new ideas and policies and so forth on managing the world. I mean, we have like Henry Kissinger is usually there and those kinds of people. There are kings and queens at times. There's top diplomats or central bankers. And it's just a collage of people that this is international. Primarily, you have European members of the Bilderberg group. And then you have some American members also. So that is made up of primarily, I'd say, 2/3 would be from Europe. And then I'd say the other people would be from all over Europe. You know, most of the main Western European, I'd say, allies are represented there. The interesting thing this year is going to see, they have announced already on their own site that they will be holding a meeting in Denmark, okay? And so they've already set that out. I believe right now they're listing Henry de Castries as chairman, and he's also chief executive officer of AXA Group. It's a big, big financial insurance group out of France. And he runs with the top people leadership in France. Castries does, Henri de Castries. And so those are the kind of people you had. You have such very powerful people that, you know, it's hard to describe them from an American's point of view, because these people are high up on the hierarchy of very, very rich, ultra rich, in fact, many of these people. And so are they in very, very powerful positions? And this is what gives them, where we must pay attention to this. I believe that there are around six different, from what I can tell, there are about six major world problems that exist right now. And I would say that those six world problems, okay, would be, I could tick them off a little bit here, just to sort of give you a preview. If I were there and I was holding a meeting, at, say, a We the People meeting of Bilderberg or something like that, I would list several things of interest, and I would tick off a list, I would say, with things that are the most important to We the People. Because, I mean, aren't we the people always left out? I mean, where are they ever mentioned or anything? But right now, the most pressing problem, I would think, of any would be Fukushima, okay? And I would list that as number one if I were to put together an agenda, and it would be We the People, Bilderberg type agenda. And because it's pressing and it's ongoing and it's spewing out a lot of very, very dangerous radioactive material still. A close second, but actually it might be number one, with the 9/11 and the implications of what happened after 9/11. I think that is very, very important for the reason that there's been a total lockdown, looks like to me, of this country, as far as we're moving more towards a political, but a police state in this country. Other subjects I would discuss would be what I'd call state secrets, this national security mentality, where everything is put under a heading of secret, top secret, our president's eyes only, or whatever. And in doing that, many of the problems that should be, you know, more transparent and revealed to the public are hidden away from the public, you know. So that's a really big problem, too. The panopticon is an interesting word. And the panopticon comes out of England, okay? And Jeremy Bentham came up with an idea of designing prisons where you could see every prisoner from some central locating guard station. So the actual architecture was the guard was in the center, and then they had these radiating hallways going out to where every prisoner could be seen from that central guard station there in the middle. So you could just walk around and see almost all everyone. But the panopticon is the word that came out of that kind of architectural. And Jeremy Bentham in England coined that term and came up with those kinds of ideas. I would discuss at this meeting, the Contrarian meeting in Copenhagen, if there's ever one held there, if I could conceptualize or imagine one to be, I would discuss fascism, and I would go back and do some World War II history, you know, about, you know, those Nazis that survived and where did they go, what kind of positions of power and the money they invested. And then also global warming. Gosh, if my ideal type of symposium would have someone like Lord Monckton debating some other person. That's sort of a keen thing to think about, isn't it? I might put this thing together. Who knows, you know? It might be a small idea here that can grow and become something overnight, you know? But something like that might be of value, okay? In other words, the Bilderberg is going to meet at the Marriott downtown there in Copenhagen, the Marriott Hotel. And why not have some other meeting out there? But this time, let's don't go out there and be confrontational or something. Let's sit down and have some of the finest speakers in all of Europe and America, wherever we can get them to come in and speak on these matters, these sort of six major international problems and what we the people's agenda would be, see? That's what I conceptualize, and that's what I'd like to work at. In fact, I'm beginning to work on this idea already. And I've sort of broached it like a maybe thing, an imaginative thing, but I'm working on this this kind of a symposium now. And we've got a couple of verbal commitments from people already. So it's going to be a reality in downtown Copenhagen. But we're not going to be there and just slam the Bilderberg group. They're there anyway, and they're very powerful. But we're going to sit there, and we're going to get feedback, with the feedback that we can. And they disclose agenda of what they're going to be talking about also. So we'll have their agenda. We're going to be put on the table our own agenda. And then we're going to go from there and try to do something in the positive sense. We could always send a copy of our agenda over to them, whether they want it or not, you know. We can still present it to them and say, look, we the people, Bilderberg.com, here's what we believe in. And we're the people of the world. We'll get people from all over. We'll have some kind of a symposium, a conference, or type workshops. And we'll sit down and we'll talk about these matters. Try to make some sense out of this world for a change. And about this fascism thing, we really need to talk about that. I think what comes to my mind also is a corporate fascism. We've got to talk about that. We've got to talk about forgiveness. You know, how are we going to proceed if we continue to hate? Hatred continues the division. And the division, all the division does is continue us in fighting. You know, years ago, I began to visualize, okay, different groups as cult. Tick, see? And I started, you know, researching what is a cult and what are characteristics of a cult and how does that originate and why do cults originate and so forth? And what are the dynamics of that, see? And I begin to say, you know, it's a pejorative term for groups whose beliefs and practices are considered abnormal or bizarre, see? But basically, What we have more than anything else is that the word cult, the way that I interpret it and define it, can be used to describe any group. See, what I begin to see is that a cult is a group, an organized group, with a certain idea based and the rules and regulations upon which that group is governing themselves. They could have constitution and bylaws. They might not have any rules at all, see. But what they do more than any other thing is that they come together and they begin to profess some kind of beliefs. You could have churches that could be labeled as cultic. Not in the pejorative term, but in the term that the way I'm describing. I'm describing that a cult is a group of people with a certain collection of ideas and rules and regulations to govern themselves, and then which is that difference to other groups that might be opposite their beliefs. The real way to see this thing is that these cults are promulgated and created by individuals with certain ideas, and sometimes those are predisposed ideas. When we come to being born into a family, then we're a captive of that family. And so we're subject to the ideas that are impressed upon us, that are nurtured into us, and that are taught us by those family members. As a family, as we grow a little older, then we move out to the school, the public schools, if you do that. And then you go into the college and so forth. But at the end, it's like they're manufacturing a bunch of widgets out here, you know. Now, they give you some kind of a graduation diploma, but it's just it's a collection of differing curriculums that arrive at a certain conclusion, whether it's nature or anything else, see. In other words, evolution is this, and we all have to believe that. And science is this. Scientism becomes a religion like itself. The university, years ago, Francis Schaeffer put forward the idea that coming out of the universities was a secular humanist type of individual. See? So what we have all these individuals, whether they're on the far left or the far right, they've been conditioned and they have predisposed situations where they've been culled into, they've been, you could say, cultized into, you know, a certain way of being and acting. And it can be like the cult of global warming, or it can be the cult of anti-global warming, or it can be the cult of gun ownership, or it can be the cult of gun confiscation, see. We know that when you limit the ownership of weapons, especially sidearms and rifles and so forth, only to the military or the police, that's characteristic of tyranny, of communist, right-wing tyrannies. And they always label Nazism as right-wing. Well, actually, National Socialism is the name of the party, National Socialism Party. It was a socialist, but it was in opposition to communists. So there was a rival group of communists within Germany at the time of pre-World War II Germany. And that's what the Nazis did. As soon as they consolidated their power, they got rid of the communists. And then they went to war later, and they struck a peace deal with the communist Soviets, and then later on abrogated that and went to war with Russia. The characteristic, whether you're talking about Hitler, or you're talking about some of our Western leaders or the European leaders, is that there's a God-men type of mentality and arrogance. It goes along with young men that are very prosperous and very successful, and they begin to make a lot of money. But the money itself supports new ideas within them of a self-worth, but it's only based on money, see? And so there's a parallel that's been created. The more money you have, the more you're valuable, the more valuable a person you are. Well, that's not true. You can be a bum on the street and go out and help an old lady across the street and be a very valuable part of the community. It's what's in your heart that matters. And you can't buy what's in people's heart. The people that are dedicated in this world, money can't buy goodwill or kindness or what's in their heart. That comes from within. All this other stuff is put up jobs. You go there, the Bible says mammon. Yeah, that's right. Well, if you don't want to listen to that and you criticize the word there and you say, well, if God could do this, he would just do it overnight. And well, you know, it's the grace that we have to look at. This is where people don't really understand sometimes Christianity, even Christians that call themselves that. They get caught up in a humanism, Christian humanism. See, the best book on these subjects like this would be Understanding the Times, that's published by, Summit Ministries out of Colorado. I think the author's name, David Nobel, Noebel. If you go out there and look at that book or get a copy, it's about $25 originally. It used to have four different worldviews, and I think he expanded that to six. But if you'll start looking at those worldviews, and what he does is the treatment of those worldviews is according to the proponents, okay, of those different worldviews. So what he began to explain to the reader, okay, is a more in-depth idea of what worldviews are, okay? And this is what makes it important, is that the worldviews that we have come to, you could say, accept, okay? You've got to begin to understand that was not always at your choice, because you are an individual, okay? And you're caught up in, okay, a group, a family, then you're going to be subject to those family views. So if you're in a Christian family, they're going to take you to church. If you're an atheist family, they're going to blow it off on Sunday and go out drinking or something. I don't know, or whatever. They may not even do that. The six worldviews that Summit Ministries has a treatment of is a biblical Christian view, an Islam view, a secular humanism view, Marxist-Leninism view, cosmic humanism view, and postmodernism view. And what they do there is the treatment of those six worldviews is the theology, philosophy, the ethics, the biology, the psychology, the sociology, the law, the politics, the economics, and the history. And I added another one on there one time, and I put down, well, under economics, I guess you're going to see, but I talked about money. There should be something about money here, you know, and so forth. But those are the different six worldviews that Summit Ministries out of Colorado has. And you can go into summit.org on the web and look that up and go in there, and you'll be able to pull that up. These six worldviews from resources, I believe. But that's what's interesting about this book, is a friend of mine gave this book to me. At the time, there was only four worldviews: the biblical Christian view, the secular humanist, Marxist-Leninism, and cosmic humanism. Now, cosmic humanism is the New Age, basically, okay? They list Shirley MacLaine, Spengler, Chopra, and Walsh as followers of that. Nitschke, the postmodernism, with Derrida, Rorty, Foucault, and Nitschke as postmodernism. And secular humanism, they have Humanist Manifesto 1, 2, and 3. They're basically atheist. And then the Quran, the theism is unitary, you know, based upon Muhammad's life. And then biblical Christian is Trinitarian or you know, in view. See, so go in there and look at that and see what you think, and it can do nothing but give you a greater understanding of what's really going on in this world. We had major earthquakes along the coast of Chile. My gosh, I believe it. They came up with an 8.2. And then they came back with an aftershock of 7 point something. I mean, just unprecedented, but the 8.2 evidently didn't do as much damage as everyone thought. Oh, the latest on the MH370 plane. What's going on that? I've got to check this web to make sure myself. But I mean, there are people that are peering out there, okay? And writing things, okay? And there seems to be some theories, okay? And they're trying to get the black box down there in the South Indian Ocean. And other things that are happening would be that some of the theories, okay, the conspiratorial theories, would say that it was hijacked or taken over, or the pilots were in on it, and that plane got diverted to the Maldives Islands, and then landed in Diego Garcia. And the way the story goes is that this conspiratorial view is that they landed there, and then they were going to take that plane, and there's a twin plane in Israel, and that somehow they were going to take parts off of that and equip that other plane and use it for some kind of a false flag. And then there were these Freescale engineers on there. And these Freescale engineers were going to developing a really top secret chip that would be a major breakthrough, and so that the you know, the Israeli interest did not want that falling into China's hands and other people's hands. So they went ahead and absconded with it. I mean, that's one of the theories now. I don't know, say. But they're continuing to search, I guess, down there in the South Indian Ocean. I don't think anything new has come out of that yet. And they've got a U.S. black box detector that joins the search and so forth. Yeah, but no news, far as I know, is coming out of there at this particular time. Now, these wild views, they may or may not be, you know, close to what really happened, but I thought I'd just put them out there on the table for your consideration. And I'm not saying that's what happened either, but we know that it was more than just, we know the plane was intentionally flown off of its, you know, flight path, you know, intentional. It was turned off of there. We know that you have to intentionally turn the transponder off and cut it off right there between the pilot and co-pilot. Between the two, either one can turn the switch off. We know that was intentionally done. That's when the thing started becoming harder to track. We have a sighting by islanders off there in the Maldives Islands that say they saw that plane early that morning in the area. We know Diego Garcia is south of the Maldives Islands, and so on and so on goes the conspiratorial, you know, theory that something like that happened. But I'm not saying that is for sure. It's hard to tell exactly, because you get these theories that are floating out there, and this thing had all kinds of different supposedly facts behind it. But just go ahead and go into the internet and go in there and research that. We don't know for sure, but it's very interesting. Two tunnels were found with rail systems across the U.S.-Mexican border. Oh man, that's nothing new, isn't it? In Mali, there was Ebola cases. We have, you know, different things happening here. Unemployment stuck at 6.7. So we're not proceeding past there. Oh, I know what. Something came up today, or just, I think it was early this morning, about some money being missing. Okay, what is this? I mean, they just print this stuff up. Okay, this is of the Physical Times, Brianna Ely, of the Physical Times. And she's saying the State Department has no idea what happened to $6 billion used to pay its contractors. In a special management alert made public Thursday, the State Department's Inspector General, Steve Linick, warned significant financial risk and a lack of internal control at the department has led to billions of unaccounted dollars over the last 6 years. Well, this would be under Hillary's control and management, I would think. The alert was just the latest example of the federal government's continued struggle with oversight over its outside contractors. And it goes on. It says the government blatantly wastes $30 billion a year. The lack of oversight exposes the department to significant financial risk, the auditor said. It creates conditions conducive to fraud, as corrupt individuals may attempt to conceal evidence of illicit behavior by omitting key documents from the contract file. It impairs the ability of the department to take effective and timely action to protect its interests and, in turn, those of the taxpayers. Oh, they finally mentioned the taxpayers. Well, that's nice. They just mentioned $6 billion like it was nothing. I mean, it's amazing, you know. And is the government, is the public going to do anything? When are y'all going to get mad out here? You know, I can't hardly understand why the public isn't up in arms about any of this stuff, you know. Of course, if we in the our movement, you know, freedom and liberty movements and all that stuff, we care about this stuff. And we're just a few people. I just hope that people begin to really wake up out there and begin to understand that they're taking us to the cleaners here, folks. And, you know, we're not gonna come out of this. The corruption, the money is so great. The thieving of America, someone ought to write that book, Thieving of America. Maybe there's one written, I just don't know about it, you know. But that would make a tremendous book. It used to be the cheating culture, now it's the corrupting culture. So we've gone from just mere cheating to it looks like, you know what I mean, thieving and plundering on a large scale, you know. And it's amazing what's going on out here. And we have people driving around, you know, looking here and there and trying to find their way through life the best they can, I guess. But it's very, very difficult sometimes to ascertain exactly the mindset of individuals. Anyway, I do want to remind our listening audience, we talked with Shane Widener earlier. There is a charity event going on April 12th for diabetes at Stranger Brew there on Manshack Road and 5300 block. I think it's 5326 or something like that, Manshack Road. So come on out for that. Go buy some tickets. Look for announcements that should be coming up shortly. I'll have that site up as quickly as I can, hopefully by tomorrow. It'll be WeThePeopleBilderberg.com. WeThePeopleBilderberg.com. So start looking for that site on the web, and you're going to see a symposium that I'm going to put together in Copenhagen. It will be the 30th and 31st, probably. And we'll be flying back probably on the 1st of June or something like that. I believe the Bilderberg is slated for 3 days. I think at 29, 30, 31st. On the first day, we don't need to be there, but that's Thursday, but Friday and Saturday, we'd like to be there with our, meeting and then make comments on what they've done if we can find out. And then we're going to put forward our 6 world, problems. And we've already got a couple of verbal commitments from some very fine gentlemen. And I'll look for the announcement on WeThePeopleBilderberg.com. And then you should be able to see the announcements and follow that. That will be building as our symposium builds. Thus, our symposium. We're calling this symposium. We hope to be in downtown Copenhagen, not far from the Bilderberg group meeting. And I just again want to thank all the people. And Mike Adams, my gosh, we're going to release one of his deals here pretty soon. Mike Adams stood up there and, man, he's a powerful speaker. And we only gave him 45 minutes and he could have spoke an hour and a half, you know. I don't even think we gave him that much, really. Our schedule that morning was that afternoon actually was a little cluttered and we were behind and stuff like that. But Mike Adams is a fine person. Thank you, Mike Adams, for helping us and coming into our Fukushima Solutions World Conference. You did a commendable job, and we thank you very much, Mike Adams. But anyway, we had Katrina Balinski. We didn't get Lieutenant in. He sort of fell through the board there. There was a miscommunication, didn't get him in, but I'll talk to him later this week. And I'll also be interviewing Helen Caldicott in the near future, Joe Mangano, and then we had Steve Hines last Saturday night we played, and then Dale Klein, he stood up and talked, gave us some good briefing on the side, the pro-nuclear power side. There is some recent information, too. It's very disturbing. The nuclear storage facility out in Carlsbad, evidently, there was a cave-in in there and it released or crushed some, canisters holding plutonium. And evidently the problem right now, and, I believe David Yurth speaks to that. So, this second hour, listen to what he has to say about it. And, he made that announcement on the 22nd. But what happened is that, now they've got this deep underground storage facility there at Carlsbad, and they buried all of this radioactive plutonium there, and they buried it to where it would become crystallized, okay, and then be inert because it was crystallized into a glass for them. And now that maybe that glass is broken up, then it's opening up the possibility that plutonium is free to move around, and it's contaminated places in this deep storage area where they can't go down there anymore. The implication also that David Yurth gave was that it's so bad that not even robots can operate there. There's a radiation level that even the ICs, or the integrated circuitry and all that that robots need to operate, if the radiation is at too high a level, they can't even exist in those kinds of conditions, because there's circuitry there that has to perform under certain characteristics and certain limits. And when those circuits are in too high a radioactive, environment, the circuitry, the electrical circuitry will no longer function properly. And I believe that that's what David Yurth was saying, and he'll listen to this second hour, and you'll be able to hear exactly what he has to say. But anyway, getting back to the world news, we've had all kinds of Malaysian things. That's over, and that's 4 weeks old now, news. I guess Henry Kissinger is going to be there probably at the Bilderberg Group meeting at the end of May in Copenhagen. He's always been there, and he's very powerful. And he's well thought of in those circles, even though there are a lot of people that frown on what his work has been like, really like. So the other things that are happening out there is the Chileans. We got to pray for them on these earthquakes that have happened off the coast there, and try to, bring a little bit of hope, to that very dire situation. Glenn Beck, I listen to him occasionally because I want to see where he's coming from. The value of Glenn Beck is his connections. He's about 75 to 85% okay, and then he loses it on the top level stuff. On the 9/11 situation, he's never come clean on that. If you don't come clean on that and you're that smart, then there's problems. I have to have problems with you. See, but he's at a level that he could influence a lot of people into taking a second look on the 9/11 event, and everyone would prosper. The country would become more free. We would have less of a police state and so forth. But Glenn Beck won't come clean on that. So as a result, he's just playing with us like a cat plays with a mouse before it kills it, see. He gets down on his knees and he prays to God, and he takes the flag and he squashes it on the floor, and he's going to stop the hemorrhaging of America. You know what I mean? Well, those kind of theatrics I don't respect. Getting back to this dedication of the Vietnam War Monument, I applaud and commend all the fine veterans, whether they were in government or not, for being there. There was one table that had the best information, and it was the POW table. I went over to one table, and I pointed back over at the POW table, and I said, that's the best exhibit out here, because they left some of our boys behind in Vietnam, and they didn't go back to get them. And none of these Congresses, and even squeaky clean Jimmy Carter's administration, didn't go back and get them. So I'm not happy about those veterans that were left there. And this tells you, these monuments and all this is just put up stuff to make the politicians look good. Those veterans that were walking out of there that had Agent Orange injuries, those are the ones that we must respect and honor. And let's try to get them some good alternative medicine. I want to thank you for listening. So good night.